Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
Good morning. Today, a bit of poetry from a writer who grew up on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Johanna Urich, and with me this morning is Don Reardon. He's written some fine books, including The Raven's Gift, a novel about a plague in Alaska. But the recently published Without a Paddle is his first book of poetry. Don, thanks for being our guest this morning on Coffee at KYUK. We're going to start right off with a poem.
All right, you want Blueberry Blue first?
Yeah.
Blueberry Blue. A white styrofoam cup filled to the rim with tundra blueberries, just picked. The skin of each a light, soft blue, and just beneath the surface a deeper blue, a darkness. Not unlike the bruises often found on the very Alaskan women who pick these sweet berries, their numbers, like the contents in the cup, beyond count. And our leaders argue over oil, focused only on filling the pipeline with the darkness needed to manufacture the cup, and they continue to ignore the contents.
That poem just gets me, like, deep.
Yeah, there's been a couple times where I struggle to read it. It's too true. And I've read it to audiences that I was trying to reach at a deeper level, where there was politicians in the crowd. There was people that I knew who could maybe make a difference and make them connect and understand on a different level that people are hurting. And we just keep arguing about the same things. It's always about resources, when the real resource is the people and the land. Not what we can take from it, but what we can learn from it.
That poem makes this twist from this activity that is just so joyful to something that is so deeply hurtful.
The image from this poem haunted me long before I wrote it. The blueberries that are picked off the tundra, there's just so many blues that are there. But then that's the same color as bruising, of fresh bruising. I don't really even want to talk about the image that I had that originated the poem, but just in my head I was seeing a woman who was struggling, that she'd been hurt, and at the same time she's there picking berries, which is such a beautiful thing. And those two just really coalesced in a way that still haunts me. I guess that's why I struggle to read it sometimes.
One of the reasons it's my favorite of yours is that it does what you seem to do so well, which is this almost brutal honesty, this fairness, with, at the same time, compassion.
Wow, thank you. I guess that's all I know. And I think some of that's from my upbringing, from growing up in the YK Delta. And you were raised to speak your truth and be honest and say what you feel. I think that's the path to healing for a lot of people. And so with my writing, I mean, it's simple and straightforward, because I guess that's kind of who I am. I'm going to try to be honest with what I care about. And if I capture it right, then it works. There's just no way to not be direct about this issue. And the hypocrisy and our failure to address kind of the issues that are at hand.
I want to move to another poem. Also, a woman is in the center of it, and that is The Shaman. I love that poem because I know how you grew up. You grew up in villages in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta.
I was the only white boy, yeah, often. Kind of the older I get, the more I just cherish those experiences and understand how formative they were for me. And then the people who are there too, who have just, they just feel like family now. Even if I haven't been back there in a while, I still feel like I could just go and be home instantly. The Shaman Girl. In eighth grade, I met a shaman. This girl possessed the power of kindness. My magical friend transformed me, changed the skin others saw. So I was no longer different, strange. Decades later, when I felt scared again, she knew. The shaman sent me raven skin, then salmon skin. With her gift, transformed, no longer afraid to be different, strange.
This, it sounds like you're talking about a real person.
Yeah, I'm absolutely talking about a real person. The real person is Lonnie Hoover. She was a friend when I was moved to Kosigaluk. Yeah, she made me feel okay being there. It made me feel welcome, you know, and we were friends then and we stayed friends. But I mean, we lost communication. I think that's kind of the beauty of social media, that we were able to kind of reconnect. What happened was I saw she was making these beautiful cuss books, and she'd made one for somebody in exchange for my book. And I said, wait, hold on a second. I'll send you a copy. You don't need to do that. She'd made this beautiful cuss book for somebody with a big raven on it. And so I sent her a copy of my book, and the next thing I knew, she sent me this cuss book. And, I mean, I hadn't seen her in, I don't know, 20 years maybe? And it was as if it was tailored, you know, it was just magically perfect. I had never had even a piece of clothing that kind of felt and fit so good. And that was right as the Raven's Gift came out in the U.S. when I was there doing like more events and really felt uncomfortable and strange kind of being in this new role for me. It was like my armor. And I never told her that. Here I am with this cuss book as this armor that made me feel like I could say the things I needed to say. And then I wrote another book, and then here comes another cuss book that she made for me. And I let her read early drafts. You know, like she got to read an early draft of The Raven's Gift. She got to read an early draft of a book that was called Moving Salmon Bay that was never published in the U.S., but it was published in France. And then another subsequent book, Never Quit, she made me a cuss book with that, with a guy in a parachuting. I mean, and they all just fit perfectly. It's so great. So, yeah, she's the shaman girl in my life. And what she taught me as a kid, she was able to continue that through my life. And so it's, I think that's kind of the magic of a shaman, is the ability to help people heal, help give strength. There's something magical about her for sure.
Another poem.
Yeah, it's funny flipping through these and trying to decide, like, what should I read? Because some of them are just silly, and then some are really heavy.
Oh, the funny one. I love that the kid that goes and steals bicycles.
Oh, yeah. That one's heavy. That one's pretty heavy. I don't know.
But it's also a happy ending.
It's a very real... I mean, this is somebody that we've lost. Yeah, I can try this one. Edwin Wheeler. The Edwin I knew stole bikes in Bethel, rode them to rust in the tundra dust, then stacked frames, rims, seats, and flattened tire tubes in a pile beside the plywood box shanty that was his home. My dad, his probation officer, called him the runner. And that's what he did. When people began to wrap chains around their cycles, he ran booze for bootleggers, dope for dealers. Edwin moved to Anchorage like many of us, and I hope before he died, homeless, alone, he snatched at least one hillside ride, maybe a sweet Cannondale, tricked out, full suspension, hydraulic disc brakes, a ding-ding bell. I hope when they let Edwin into heaven, he can ride the hell out of the gold-paved streets behind the pearly gates. And when he's done, ditch God's bike in the long grass beside a salmon stream.
I love that poem. I know that it's heavy because it involves somebody who ended up on the streets and dying, but it also has this element of joy, of riding that bike.
Yeah, it's probably me trying to reconcile those losses, right? You know, it's awful to move into Anchorage and then to see people you know on the streets, to have those losses, and yeah, the injustice of it gets to me. And so I think I was kind of trying to turn that into something funny, or not funny, like powerful and optimistic, that he got to steal a few bikes here and ride them, you know, really good ones.
Yes, but he rode them all the way to heaven.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about that. I just thought that was a given, I guess, you know. Yeah.
Well, for many people who see this person on the street, it's not necessarily a given to them.
Yeah, that's true.
And to have that be a given so casually and so organically in your poem is what makes it joyful for me.
That's great. I appreciate that. I guess that's just kind of maybe how I try to see the world.
How do you balance it all? Teaching, writing, not to mention Family Guy.
Family, yeah. Well, the nice thing about like this collection of poems is this is many years of poems, you know, so I don't know how I balance it. I guess writing is just something I have to do, and if I'm not doing it, I'm not happy, but there's often not time to do it, so then it's make time or find time. Steal time, I steal time when I can. Don't tell my wife. Yeah, you know, there may be moments where I should be maybe grading a few papers, and instead I write an essay or work a little bit on a book. But also, my wife has been really gracious that way too, where if I have a project, and I always wait till the deadline's like looming, and then it's, I need the weekend, and she'll give it to me, and then I'll go hole up somewhere and write like a maniac for 12 hours. So it's kind of whenever I can steal the time. But really, it's just a part of who I am, and I've been doing that since I was a little kid. I got the bug when I was in second grade when we lived in Akyak, and the ghost stories, the ideas of monsters being out there I just loved that. We always, wherever we lived in the village, it was always some haunted schoolhouse. And so at a really early age, I started reading really scary stories, scary books, Stephen King and the like, and then all I wanted to do was that. I wanted to write and scare people. And then eventually I grew up just a little bit and figured it'd be okay to just maybe not. I guess I'm still trying to scare people. I'm trying to scare them in a different way, scare them into being human again.
You wrote a story about a plague, and here we are. The Yukon-Kuskokwim now is like the hottest spot in the state with the highest number of cases per population.
I've struggled since the pandemic's happened, and I've said this a few times. I almost like wished I hadn't wrote the book, because I don't want people to have those images that I created in their minds. I don't want that world to happen, which was why I wrote it. My concern was something like that would happen and the world wouldn't come to help. And then kind of here we are. I never imagined that we would maybe need the world to come help the whole country, not just the YK Delta.
We need the world to help the world.
Yeah, really, yeah. And the irony of all of this for me is my love for storytelling and the idea that I wrote that book about the pandemic all stems from what I learned growing up in Yupik culture, because everything from the time that Western culture came was framed by epidemics, you know? And so my images in my head from a young kid were houses that had been abandoned because of the epidemic, and places that we would go zoom past, going past Huixluc would be the children's home, right? And there's an orphanage that's due to a pandemic. And so all of that's really scary right now, but really I think to find hope in it is that the idea that the people of Alaska have been through this before and they survived, they're survivors, especially the Native Alaskans, Alaska Natives, the indigenous people here have been through this, and they know how to get us through it, and I trust they will. And so I have hope there for sure. You know, the elders have been through this, and we need to protect them so we can get past it.
The story and the power of those things that are evoked by a story that can give us a lot more truth than mere facts in many ways. So I'm a fan of yours just for doing that.
Thank you. It's scary. I mean, because I'm treading on ground that I don't want to be treading on often, just the, you know, classic white guy coming, writing about stuff that, yeah. It's interesting because Sherry Simpson, we just lost her, a great Alaskan writer. She was one of my mentors when I went to grad school and was really kind of just starting to write about home. I was afraid to. And she's like, you know, it's okay to write about your story too. And that was freeing for me, liberating a little bit, because I was really scared and didn't want to offend anybody or step on any toes or be that guy that said or did the wrong thing, because I just felt so grateful to the culture and the community for raising me, you know. So, yeah.
And yet, your stories have a power and a viability because they are yours. Don, thanks for being our guest this morning on Coffee at KYUK. We've been listening to some of Don Reardon's poems in an extensive collection titled Without a Paddle. This book of poems joins earlier novels written by Reardon. There's a lot of good poems in it. This morning, we heard Don read some of my favorites. I suggest getting a copy of Without a Paddle and coming up with your own favorites. I'm Johanna Urich, and this is Coffee at KYUK.